This program is sponsored by Walter Anderson Nursery.
If you have a green thumb or have always wanted one, then get ready for Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas, help solve problems, and keep you up to date on the latest developments in the nursery and landscaping industry. Call in now with your gardening questions. 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. Now, here are your Garden Talk hosts, Ken, David, Mark, and George.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. We're going to be here for the next hour talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Morning.
How are you guys?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
We did this heat wave that we were supposed to have.
Did materialize in your eyes?
It didn't really materialize.
It was hot.
It was warm, but it wasn't unbearable. I mean, not like other places. What was it? Palm Springs got up to 124 or something?
Yeah, it was crazy. But yeah, along the coast, I mean, it was nice.
I saw a thing that said Death Valley was within 10 degrees of its all-time high. Why is that
so
relevant? And why is that news?
So much your point.
Yeah.
It's like I think they said that Palm Springs beat its record that had stood for 82 years or something. And the record was like 123.
So. Wow.
We went to the beach, I guess, Wednesday night. It was chilly.
Yeah,
at the water.
It kind of gets heavier.
Despite how warm it was inland, it was downright chilly as the sun got ready to set.
Well, Idlewild hit a new high of 96 yesterday, breaking the old record by smashing it by 6 degrees. And the other places were
warm.
Borrego, Indio, 119, 119, Thermal, Palm Springs, all 119. So probably would not have been a good time to be out playing, golfing, doing anything outside in the desert.
Well, the only thing you'd be doing is watering the plants that were in pots.
And hydrating oneself.
Oneself as well.
One would hope.
Yeah, I got home last night. My tomatoes were
a little
peaked.
Help me.
So I went through and watered everything. By the time dinner was over, you couldn't tell anything had happened to them. They looked
perked back up.
They looked very nice.
Well, the onshore breeze came in. It was very cool.
It was a beautiful evening.
It was a gorgeous evening. Yeah.
Each of the hot days.
Yeah.
Yeah,
kept the house closed during the day and opened it up when I got home.
Didn't
old-fashioned cooling system. Turned a strong fan on and blew the hot air out and drew the cool air in.
Yeah, still have not turned on the air conditioning yet this season. So hopefully that'll keep.
Supposed to stay warm for another couple of days, and then it's supposed to cool down into the middle of the next week.
I thought it was cooling down yesterday.
Well, it is cooling. It's still warm.
Yeah.
But on a chart, it's actually
as my neighbor would say,
bit.
Por que no los... No, no los dos. We can do both. Uh-huh. It is still warm and still cooling. Schrodinger's cat.
Yeah, there you go. Schrodinger's, they're perfect.
But it's supposed to get hot again next weekend. And maybe I still haven't planted my squash that I was going to do as it warmed up earlier in the month.
From seed or?
Well, that's what I was going to do. I have a good collection of vegetable seeds but every day that it's not put in the soil is another day that it's
Not growing.
Thank you.
Yeah. My corn actually has recovered from the fertilizer burn, and it's doing quite well.
That was the triple 16 you threw out?
Yeah. Instead of throwing it at the base, I just kind of threw it out over the corn, and it gets stuck in the
So it's not
the
quite like the it's not like the grow power where we say you don't have to worry about burning with this?
But you know, it's funny. My dad used to do that. My mom would get so irritated with him. He would come home with a big bag of fertilizer, and he'd just go out in the backyard and throw it all over the place. And like a week later, everything's burned, and then 3 weeks after that, it's like, boom, everything's just growing.
Patience, just wait.
So, but you know what's funny? The corn that's growing the fastest is the popcorn. The popcorn's a good foot and a half taller than the rest of the stuff, and it all went in at the same time.
Hmm. Are you actually going to harvest it, shuck that corn, and make popcorn?
I was going to let Blake do that.
Okay.
I thought he might get a kick out. I was telling Blake that when I was a kid, we used to get seed for strawberry popcorn. Do you remember that? It was really short ears.
Well, I remember seeing the strawberry popcorn.
Yeah, really short ears and burgundy red kernels. And my grandmother always had it around Thanksgiving, and she would use it as a table decoration. And at my grandparents' house, where we would always go for Thanksgiving dinner, once dinner was done, my grandmother and my mom and any other women that were there would get up and clear the table, and all the guys would stay at the table. I know, it's old school, but...
Talking
men things, and my grandfather would reach over, and he'd pick up one of the little ears of popcorn, and he'd pop a couple of the kernels off of it and put it in a spoon, and then hold the spoon over a candle. And when the kernels would pop, they would fly across the room, and I just thought that was the most hilarious thing.
That is not something you could do while the voices of reason were in the room, so you had to wait for every voice of reason to walk out of the room for you to do such a thing.
I couldn't do it today.
Yeah.
So, but fond memories. Let's see, we're getting towards the end of June already, which seems hard to believe, and throw it out there right now, just to let everybody know, both of the stores are going to be closed on July 4th, which is right around the corner.
Yeah,
it is.
We are also just a couple of days away from that longest day, are we not? It's the 19th?
No, it's the 22nd, I think.
Yeah, that's next Monday, Monday night or Tuesday.
Few days. Then.
Right.
Yeah, a few days. Yeah. You know what else kicks off this time of the year?
I do not.
Poinsettia season.
Oh.
This is when the growers are putting up their cuttings for holiday poinsettias.
Wow.
And
I feel like it was yesterday that we were shuffling them around the store in Poway, and I'm sure down in Point Loma. Just
correct.
Just tons of them everywhere. That wasn't yesterday?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was close.
Seems like it.
Oh my Lord.
But I was reading an article in an email version of one of the trade publications that I get. Oh my gosh, the protocol that they have to go through to grow poinsettias.
It's a lot of work.
It's an amazing amount of work, and when you dedicate that much of your greenhouse space to one crop,
you got to make it right.
You got to get it right,
right?
Because otherwise, it's going to be bad news. But yeah, between the disinfecting and the planting, and I didn't realize how much work it was to put together a poinsettia crop, but it's a tremendous amount of work.
It's a lot of greenhouse space.
And for such a short window, it all has to be timed perfectly, because don't get to sell it year-round.
No. It's not something that the leftovers in February people are clamoring to get.
Poinsettias are not worth much on December 26th.
Right.
Right. So,
or 25th, for that matter. But in that same publication, there was an interesting article about...
the picture, Ken.
Tomato leaf curl. I'll show you the picture. And it's a picture of tomatoes with lots of curly foliage on it. And it was, they determined it was 2,4-D or dicamba damage.
Really?
And so the article was on spray drift, which we talk about.
Drift,
We talk about drift when you're spraying.
How many times when you've brought that up to somebody who's had a tomato leaf that looks like that, say they've never,
they don't use
herbicides in their yard.
Yeah.
In this article, they talk about a commercial tomato grower who had damage on their crops, and they determined that it was from a railroad that had sprayed along the easement over 100 yards away. So that's how far
it travels.
That's how far it can travel.
So when it drifts, it truly drifts.
And they did say that tomatoes are extremely sensitive to 2,4-D and dicamba. But that's why we tell people.
And for those of you who are unaware, that's what's the primary ingredients in most of the broadleaf weed killers.
In the broadleaf weed killers for your lawn.
Interesting.
And a lot of people have lawns right up next to
their gardens or tomatoes
And how many times have we been told that their gardener or somebody came by and used a broadcast spreader to spread the dry formulas of 2,4-D onto the lawn, and that's an easy way to get it to drift.
Yeah You know, the weed and feeds for lawns, I'm not a big fan of them. I you know, it sounds convenient, but you're paying a price for that convenience, because everywhere where that drops out of the spreader and it doesn't land on a weed, it's wasted. It's not going to do anything. It's kind of the same way with like a hose end sprayer. You spray the entire lawn to get rid of the weeds.
Yeah,
the weeds are probably only a small percentage of your lawn. So the majority of what you're spraying just goes to waste.
It's a good point.
Unless it drifts onto your vegetables, and then
that's
you've got a whole other problem going.
Well, that is one of the questions that people often ask when they're. That I ask, or that we ask of our customers when they're trying to get rid of weeds selectively. Let us assume now that you have been successful and removed all of the weeds. How much of your lawn is going to be left? If you're going to have to reseed or resod, then there's probably no point in trying to be selective.
True.
So if the weeds have taken over an area, then maybe you just go wipe it all out and start over in that area, if you're going to have to anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Because sometimes the weeds are... most of the lawn.
Yeah, that's the green part. Well, of
it's domesticated weeds that make the back or the front attractive, right?
Yeah. I that's kind of what I'm dealing with right now in the backyard, is the weeds are the greenest part of my lawn.
I've been having that discussion with my folks these last few weeks, and we're going to enjoy the green weeds and just water them.
We just put a new fescue lawn in, and I did everything, you know, I did everything right as far as the book. Well, you know, got it all tilled, did everything, and then watered it so that the weeds came up, killed the weeds, watered it, the weeds came up, killed the weeds three separate times to make sure that I get rid of them, put the lawn in, and there's more purslane coming up right now that we could eat for months.
I was going to say you could eat that.
We could eat for months and have high omega-3.
We must have hit a temperature this last couple of weeks, because I was noticing when I got home yesterday in my lawn, these red patches. Mm-hmm. Which was the purslane.
Right. And there's tons
germinating.
Of it.
And it was, you know, quarter of a half an inch tall, but it was Yes, exactly.
Right. Yeah, that gets big.
It does.
If you let it grow, it turns into
a
sell
into a seeds big mat. I think it's Botanical Interest does the golden purslane.
This was very red.
Yeah,
the red one,
right?
Yeah. And it was coming up mostly where the clear dirt was from the gophers, which I continue to battle. Haven't gotten to any.
Still having issues with them?
Constantly.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We've been having squirrel issues, but we're now having a lot of coyotes just walk across the property far earlier than normal. I mean, while having dinner at 6, the coyotes are just meandering around the property going, oh,
wow.
Are any more of those squirrels you left out?
And then, George, you and I were talking yesterday about tomato, another problem with tomatoes, curly top.
Yeah, the curly top can be a beet virus.
Yeah.
Right.
Isn't curly top a comedian?
No, you're thinking of carrot top.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, wrong vegetable.
Wrong vegetable.
But it's vectored by an insect, but nonetheless, there's in one of our disease books for tomatoes at the nursery, it talks about it being a disease virus, rather, that comes from beets.
Do you see it that often?
I haven't. I would argue that when you see the curly top, it's more likely to be the herbicide drift than it's going to be the beet. Yeah. But I don't know that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
When you went through the tomato article on the 2,4-D damage, I thought you were going to say it was coming up through the mulch from using clippings from a lawn that had 2,4-D used on it.
No.
Did it mention anything in there?
No, I didn't see anything in there about it.
At Miramar, they used to have caution signs or warning signs saying that there could be problems with that in the mulch. And who knows
what's in that mulch?
That's I know it persists, but I don't know if it what level.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I can tell you is that there's no palm fronds and there's no bamboo in it.
That you know
that's
of.
True.
That I know, 'cause if you go in and you say you're taking it to the green recycling, and if they see bamboo, they won't let
turned away once years ago by the gate.
Well, I didn't get turned away. I had to go and dump it in the dump.
So you had to pay.
Oh, I wouldn't do that. I got turned away.
So somebody else got your bamboo.
Well, I took it home and put it in the curb. I put it in the curbside and let them take it to themselves, not me.
To the same spot.
Yeah.
To the same place. There you go. Hadn't even thought about that. Yeah. If you want to give us a call today, 888-344-1170 is the number you're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with more right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
To the garden party, they all knew my name. No one recognized me. I didn't look the same, but it's all right now. I learned my lesson well. You see, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. Ken Anderson along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. Interesting plant we got into the store. I don't know if you guys have them in San Diego or not. The popcorn cassias?
Oh, I mean the one that has the fragrance, the smell? Yeah.
It smells.
I don't know if we have them in now. We have had them typically.
Yeah, we had a few gallons. We had a few gallons out in the vegetable section, and it's weird. You rub the foliage. It smells just like popcorn. And apparently the flowers smell just like popcorn.
Oh, is that? I thought it was called popcorn cassia because when the seed pods ripen, they pop, and you can hear them popping across the yard, and they spread their seed. I didn't know they smelled.
It smells like popcorn.
It smells like popcorn.
Yeah.
Not like the popcorn Ken had as a child at Thanksgiving. Yeah. This is different.
This is actually edible popcorn.
That's what I was wondering. No, you can't put that in the spoon over the fire.
I don't think so.
And we don't want to advocate that you try this at home because it could be dangerous.
Yeah. No, but it's a really pretty plant too.
It is.
But
yeah.
I was surprised. I was out talking to Tim about it, and he mentioned it. And what's the deal with that? And he said rub the foliage and smell it, and it sure enough it smells just like popcorn.
Interesting. I have to rethink. The cassia at my neighbor's house that I hear popping seeds all the time, I've always thought that was popcorn, but maybe it's totally unrelated.
It might. I'm guessing it is. So. And also out in the vegetable section, something new that I hadn't seen before is the Chinese two-tone spinach. Have you seen that?
No,
it's
I haven't.
It's
amaranth
spinach. It's green foliage, but the center of the foliage is red.
It sounds pretty.
It's a very attractive looking plant. As far as the flavor is concerned,
I haven't tried it. I just saw it out there.
I pulled a leaf off and tried it.
You got to mix
it. It's a little tangier than regular spinach. I love fresh spinach.
It's
a little bit tangier. It's not bad.
So to help everybody at home, put this on the Kenneth taste scale, with beets to the far left as down to nothing. And what would be your favorite food from the garden?
Probably tomatoes.
Okay, so we have beets on the far left and tomatoes on the far right, representing 0 and 10. Where is two-tone spinach?
I'm going to say like a 6.
Okay.
It's more than halfway up the chart.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's not bad. Like I said, it's not bad. It's just if you're going to get it and you're expecting it to be just like regular green spinach, it's not. It's a little bit different, a little bit tangier than just regular spinach, but it's good. Yeah.
And did you check its nutrient density?
No, I did not. I did not look into any of that.
Yeah, I don't eat my food like that. No. Sorry. I mean, which is a problem.
You don't graph it and chart it?
No.
See?
Okay. Typically, I don't care.
No, that's not true at all.
Yeah.
Well, you do care. Not care enough to look for its nutrient density. Either you like it or you don't.
Correct.
That's caring.
Fair enough.
Okay.
And you were doing some research yesterday, George, about rue.
Well, I stumbled upon it. I didn't start out that way. I was looking at things for the.
I'm ruining the day already.
For butterfly gardens and.
That's right. That's where it came.
I stumbled upon it and. My daughter lives up in the Central Valley, and she has a bunch of it. She loves it.
What does she do with it?
She loves. No, it's just a plant in the yard.
As an attractive plant.
It used to be used in a lot of recipes, but it has some toxicity in there. You know, old days maybe, but it's recommended you don't eat it. But well, it flowers. It's a low water, drought tolerant plant, short lived perennial, like 5 years, I think it said. But it brings in swallowtails.
Yeah, and which so it's very, surprised me.
Yeah, and that's what caught my eye about bringing in swallowtails to. Add to our butterfly listic collection.
So there actually is something
useful.
Something useful about it. But then there was also that snake bite remedy where they mixed rue and oleander.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, as an antidote. Yeah, which
accelerated the poison and took care of the pain very quickly. Yeah.
And then you're done. The snake bite doesn't hurt anymore.
It was a Greek philosopher or something that came.
Yes.
Up with
it. I forgot who it was. The elder.
Pliny.
Pliny the Elder.
Pliny the Elder.
So, yeah, you mix
rue. The late.
You mix rue with oleander, and it'll
take care of your snake bite. Yeah.
Do we suggest that nobody tries this at home?
Yes.
I think our listeners are wise enough to not try that at home without us.
What about that one listener?
Well, I'm here right now.
Okay.
So.
Okay. And you don't listen.
I don't listen.
Okay.
And then the Wednesday Wisdom that you put up.
Spiders.
Was quite interesting about spiders.
It was so cute.
What'd you learn, David?
Well, that spider was cute, and then...
That spider was a little jumping spider in my backyard. Cute little guy.
I didn't learn anything from it because I didn't read it. I looked at the picture and I moved on.
And you were done. So like your normal...
That's exactly what I did, by the way.
But wasn't there a comment about... There was either a... some kind of comment about it? Did it create a problem with somebody or something?
Oh, no. It's
only happy spider lovers?
Yeah, I actually pushed it over to the San Diego Spider Society on Facebook. A bunch of like-minded people, I guess, that don't fear the spiders and try to get maintain them and take care of them.
Not a song by Blue Oyster Cult. Don't fear the spiders.
One of the interesting things about spiders is that they... believe there's a study in Science of Nature, a report that came out in 2017 that said spiders probably eat more meat than all of humans, that they eat somewhere between 4 million and 800 million tons of meat as a predator.
They were not taking into account Mark Mahady and David Ross when they did that study.
They didn't get you.
On a good night.
On a good night.
At the Frontier Hotel.
Exactly. Well, yes.
So they are they are great predators in your garden. So what prompted this particular Wednesday Wisdom was over the last couple of weeks we've had customers come in asking to kill spiders because they're all over. I've got spiders in my citrus tree or there are spiders in my vegetable garden. How do I kill them? And I said,
you don't.
Well, why?
Want to. Yeah.
And they weren't afraid of them. They're eating my plants. And so that's why I decided to do this one because they're carnivores.
Spiders are our friends.
Spiders are good.
Hard to tell people that. And when you walk through a web, that's what you want to do is to get rid of them.
And they weren't afraid of that part of it. They actually just thought that they were destroying their plants. The number of insects that they eat, I mean,
the planet would be overrun with insects.
Not that you want to kill spiders, but there really isn't any. Most of the insecticides will probably take care of spiders, right? None of them really list that, which is fine.
Well, I mean, as a contact, it will, but you'd have to hit them.
Right. But it's like I tell people, it's like they don't put spiders on them because we don't want to kill spiders, really. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Unless and
they
do spider a good mites. Thing.
Well, right,
which,
right.
Absolutely, spider mites differently, but regular garden spiders are very useful in the garden, and they
do a job.
They're aggressive and they will eat good guys once in a while. I have a couple photos of some. Bees being devoured by some spiders.
Right,
but that said, the number of bad guys, if you will, bad insects that are detrimental to your garden that they consume is huge.
Correct.
I'm getting better about walking down to let the chickens out in the morning.
With your hands up?
I'm not as paranoid about it, and I get spider webs on me. I'm not going nuts trying to.
Oh God! Walking through the nursery at 6 o'clock in the morning.
That doesn't bother. I'm more concerned.
Section.
Yeah, I get more concerned walking out in early with snakes than I am of spiders.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. I walk through the web. I just, you know, brush it off my face and move on. But if I...
Don't you worry about the spider that's right behind there heading into your ear?
No.
That's what I think about. Yeah. And the snakes, you know where they are.
Well, yeah. I think about all those things.
I just
I'm afraid of everything.
I just don't go outside.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So the bottom line that I put on here that came from the University of California Integrated Pest Management basically said protect spiders in your garden because they prey on insects and other pests. Most spiders observed in the open during the day are not likely to bite you or cause lasting harm if they do. Spiders who bite may require you to seek medical attention, spend most of their time hidden.
Right.
And that can be a problem. Like people that have gardening shoes that they leave outside.
Yep.
Black widows love to get into dark places like that. So if you leave shoes outside.
We are creating a group of people that now are not going to go outside anymore.
if you leave shoes outside, doesn't hurt to shake them out before you stick your foot into it.
You don't
want to
stick your foot in.
For lizards.
My shoes and my boots in the garage, and I just rub my feet. When I put my feet in, I kind of expand them and rub them around in case there's something in there. I'll squish it, and then I don't have to worry about it.
What if it's something larger than an insect, like a frog or a
scorpion or something?
Never counted a frog.
I've left them out and found little frogs in the shoes and lizards.
I did get elbow damage once from a scorpion. I was in the garage doing something, and I was reaching over for something, and there was a little baby scorpion there, and I quickly pulled my arm back to get it away, and I hit my elbow on the wall. And it really
probably
hurt.
Would have been better off having the scorpion.
I would have been. Yes, I wasn't that smart
that time.
You know, with the spiders and the webs, no, they're not eating the plants, but the spider webs accumulate debris.
Yes,
which is sometimes where
spider mites or
other
insects,
pests will get a foothold. Yes, so. Cleaning that debris out.
Jet stream
is not
of water.
That's exactly. I recommend that. I mean, go out there. I mean, if you can do it.
A jet stream of water is useful.
Yeah, just go hose it out.
And the spider will come back and start again and
and
protect your garden from all the pests.
Now, you had another statistic in there, too. If spiders did decide to start eating humans, how long would we last?
I didn't put it in this article, but we were talking about it.
This is interesting.
They said that if spiders decided to eat people, thank God that they don't. But I think I've seen a movie like that as a child.
Was Vincent Price in it?
Oh, yes. But that's actually included that in here. I had the help me, but no one spoke to it. They said that in about a year, it'd take 12 months, and the spiders could just devour the human race.
I can't wrap my head around that one. But okay, a year? That's all?
Yep.
Would they be selective?
You mean like if you had a spider
in that human race
over
there.
Well, no, what I meant was if you had a spider in your home and you carefully took it outside and set it down, that spiders would not eat you.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe we could create an army.
Guts.
Do you want to finish that in a minute?
I would love
or not.
I think it's pretty much done.
Spider army. I thought you were telling me I was done, but I got you. We must be at a break. Yes, we are
at a break. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. If you want to give us a call, 888-344-1170 is the number. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
Got to the garden party, they all knew my name. No one recognized me, I didn't look the same. But it's all right now, I learned my lesson well. You see, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself.
And we're back.
Be
With more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ, I'm Ken Anderson along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. If you want to give us a call, 888-344-1170 is the number. And did you want to finish your story?
Well, no, we could do this, but instead of talking about the what spiders eat, when we get a chance, we'll talk about what maybe we have harvested from the gardens.
What we eat.
This week, okay. Yes.
As opposed to the spiders.
I'm very excited about that, but we can't leave people
on the line we need to talk to, and we're going to go to Pacific Beach where Bruce is waiting. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Good show as always.
Thank you.
Yeah. I got a question. I mean, I called a couple of weeks ago and I asked about it, but like a dummy, I didn't write it down. So anyway.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. I'll remember. I don't need to write this down.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and then my wife's going, idiot.
That's right. We go home and after the show and we say, do you remember on the show where we said something because a customer's asking about it and we have to clarify what we might have heard on the show?
Anyway, it's about hydrangeas and everything. What product do you use to get rid of the mildew spots on it?
I would think any good fungicide, like a rose and flower fungicide,
would be fine. If you have one for your roses, you can use that. If you are purchasing one, I think I would get the Immunox. I think Mr. Allman has a differing opinion down there.
Well, I would use copper, but...
Yeah, copper spray, I would tell you.
Copper's not bad.
And that's because what you just said, if you have, and I always have copper because I use it on my fruit trees.
I was giving you the opening to say neem oil. I wasn't even going to let you say copper. I wouldn't have thrown that out to you if I knew you were going to say
you
copper.
You could also use neem oil.
Okay. Immunox, copper, neem oil.
The safer fungicide would probably work too.
That's a sulfur.
Yeah. You got to be careful with the heat.
Right.
Yeah. On the neem oil, how do you spell that?
IMMUNOX. Is there just one? There's one M. There are two. IMMUNOX.
He thinks.
Okay.
Immunox or the other one with the neem oil. NEEM oil.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, I'm writing that down now.
Okay.
So, yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
Okay. Thanks. Take care. We're going to go. Talk to Phil. Good morning, Phil. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I have five raised beds. They're all 2x12 boxes. And everything is very green. It's been great for the past 2 weeks. But the cucumbers, which are growing to 14, 15 inches long, and they're just straight eight, plain old from seed cucumbers. The cucumbers are growing, but all the foliage has gone yellow. The whole rest of the garden, all the tomatoes, the rest of the squash, and everything else is very green. But just the cucumbers have gone yellow. Is there a pest or any ideas?
I've seen leaf miner primarily has been the only thing that I've seen on my cucumbers so far. And it is normal for the older leaves to kind of yellow out. And I haven't looked closely at them, but they do. I don't think the cucumbers do as well in the heat as some of the other things.
It could be.
Yeah. And I know it probably isn't this case because everything else is doing well, but overwatering can cause the yellowing of the leaves. Last season, our cucumbers were on the other side of the garden where the water ran down to it, and they just were perpetually yellow.
They did fairly well,
but you put them on the other side and they're thriving with the same.
How long did they produce? Did they peter out as the...
They petered out as soon as it got hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been noticing that the production on mine has slowed down already.
It's just one plant and there are four huge cucumbers, but all the foliage has just gone yellow. And I just wondered, since it's right next to something else, and they all have, over the years, I've calculated to drip irrigation on every plant to be specific, and it's pretty good. And it was green all the way until last week. And I don't think just because this last 2 days of heat, it started going yellow before that.
Gotcha.
Anyway, I also have spaghetti squash in an adjacent box, and I made a trellis for it to climb. A couple of things. One is, will, because I have one spaghetti squash that's 10 inches long, 6 inches diameter. I mean, it's doing very well. But there are four more that are below it that were grown to about 4 inches size, and they've just died off and fallen off the vine. The vine looks good, and the leaves look good, but I'm not sure. Is there something specific that spaghetti squash like, as far as either, I don't know, some sort of care and feeding type thing? Or the other question is, will the single spaghetti squash, which is in a bunch of jute twine that I have around, it's not supported underneath, but the vines look very strong. Will it hold until it's full size?
It should. It should.
Yeah.
Okay. And I can't think of anything that would be culturally different for that squash versus the others as far as care and feeding. I think that would be, they would be very similar.
Yeah, make sure you do feed them.
You know, but just real quick, going back to your cucumber, that, you know, as David said, spider mites can cause yellowing leaves too. So if you have a chance to look at it more closely or bring it in, we can look it up under the microscope for you. Look on the underside at the veins. They're obviously very tiny and difficult to see, but you can sometimes see them moving.
All right. And then the last question is, I also have a few different kinds, varieties of pumpkin. I have one pumpkin. It's called Princess. I don't know. It's kind of a small one, but it's got two 10-inch runners, and they had 4 pumpkins each on them. I'm sorry, 10-foot runners with maybe 4 pumpkins on each that got to about 3 inches in diameter, and they just fell off the vine just yesterday. Could that be the heat?
Well, it could be, or it could be.
People aren't trampling it or anything.
Stress. Make sure that the pumpkins and the squash need constant water. And if there's any real short or disruption in the supply, that's a much better word to use. They're going to abort the fruit, and they do better the hotter it gets. So you're kind of headed into season on those. And so I'm not that concerned that the earlier stuff has not held.
Okay. Yeah, the vines look great. The green leaves, and, you know, they look strong vines, and they've grown 10 feet out from the box. So they're on their way, but all the little fruit got to about 4 inches and just fell off 2 days ago.
Make sure that you do not allow the flow of water to get disrupted. And
they're on drip, and they get about 8 inches of water at 5 in the morning. I'm sorry, 8 ounces of water about 5 in the morning, and then they get 4 ounces of water at 8 in the morning, and then they get another little drink about 4:30 in the afternoon. Get about 4 ounces.
That does not sound like very much water. And when you're starting to support a larger, longer vine,
10-foot,
it's going to take more and more water as those roots start moving deeper and further out from the water source.
And so, as the heat picks up too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Make sure, I would go out and start digging around under those and see how far out that water is traveling. Not sound like much.
Yeah, is that a single emitter at the base of the plant?
It's a single emitter about 3 inches from the base of the plant, and I have a water meter, I don't know, one of those things, it's a 12-inch stick, and you stick it in, and it says moisture. And I go a foot out in all directions, and the boxes are about a foot down, and then I've got hardware cloth underneath. There, it's registering quite damp all the way a foot out from the base of the single vine.
Well, it sounds like you know what you're doing. I mean, I don't.
I mean, the key would be to make sure that, and water, it sounds like you're doing it, that you're getting out the base, you know, a foot or so beyond the stem of the plant.
Correct.
When I am planting my squash, last year I put them in probably a 2 to 3 foot diameter circle, and that's what I watered as the seeds came up. But as summer progressed and they'd been growing for a couple of months, I had to extend out the circle another foot or two. And it was still tough with a hose running and filling that basin to keep them moist enough, and that's in
to hold the fruit
in the soil. That's that's heavier dirt than in your raised bed. So make sure that even I think a foot is not may not be far enough. So you're going a foot out on each side. I would hope that those roots that are from a 10-foot vine are going further than that. So I would look at the watering, because that's the only thing that you've said that really
is a variable.
That concerns me.
Okay. All right. Checking the water.
Okay. Have a great weekend, Phil. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you for the help.
Anytime. Take care.
Bye.
If you want to give us a call, 888-344-1170 is the number. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back with more right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
Got to the garden party, they all knew my name. No one recognized me, I didn't look the same. But it's all right now, I learned my lesson well. You see, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. Before the break, we were talking to Phil in San Diego about watering. One of his questions was about watering. And that's, you know, with people that, when people come into the store and they're having problems with stuff that's grown in their garden or their landscaping or yard, I would say 99% of the time,
it's a
water issue.
You are right.
Unless there's some kind of physical damage,
right?
It's going to be a water issue, and it's going to be either too much or too little, and in most cases, it's from my experience, it's too little.
My dad still mocks me for that, too much or too little.
Well, that's what you say about everything.
I know my experience is people have a tendency to water too frequently.
But not long enough.
So it's like, it's one of those things where, you're watering, and we get that. Well, I'm watering, all the time, but it's like, but the water's not getting to the root system. You need to water it a little bit longer, a little bit less frequently, typically. Again, it's not always the case.
And as the weather warms up and the days continue to get longer for the next 2 days.
Right.
3 days.
The increase, the needed for water increases dramatically, and then the longer the vine, the larger the leaves of the plant, the more water they need. And I guarantee you, my summer and winter squash that I was growing last summer, the butternuts and all of those things, they were getting gallons of water, and I would try to go every 2 or 3 days, but usually that was an error on my part, and I'd have to do it almost every day.
And those were in pots or in the ground?
No, they were in the ground.
Yeah, so in the ground, you can get away with a little bit longer duration between waterings than in a pot.
Yeah, see, that.
And a raised bed is effectively a large container.
Right, and depending on what it's sitting on as well. I mean, if it's sitting on a patio slab, that would be different than if it was sitting
on soil.
Pervious soil.
Yeah, see the tomatoes that I have that are on the pool deck, they're in full sun. They get full sun all day long. They're in 20 gallon containers, and there's two plants per pot. They get water pretty much every day. And, I mean, they get gallons of water every day.
And it's going to depend on where he lives.
You live by the water, maybe.
It's cooler. Much. You don't have to do it as much. But I have noticed on my cucumbers that the older leaves look pretty crummy, and I've noticed the leaf miner because that requires no talent on my part. You can see them running through. But I haven't done any more than that to see. I have seen what looks like spider mite damage on tomatoes on the interior. The older leaves of the tomatoes are getting destroyed.
And it's not even winter.
I know. I think it might have something to do with my buying plants early from six packs and putting them into 4-inch pots and not taking good care of them on the side of my driveway before planting them a couple of months later.
So they were stressed and susceptible to pests.
Yeah.
You need spiders.
I do. Do spiders eat spider mites?
I believe they.
Yeah, yeah.
You may look that up. They may not.
Yeah. But horticultural oil last week.
They'll take care of it.
I think took care of it for my neighbor's tomato plants. I didn't take any responsibility when I said, oh, it looks like you have mites on your plants. Wonder how that happened. Let me bring over some Monterey horticultural oil.
They do eat spider mites.
Okay. Is that part of the metric tons of meat
the 400
that they consume?
Million tons that they eat, yes.
That's a lot.
You'd have to eat a lot of spider mites to get a ton of meat.
You have to eat a lot of spider mites to get an ounce.
Exactly. Although we've had some tomato plants brought in the winter months that probably have several pounds of spider mites on them.
So what have we harvested?
Blackberries, apricots.
Yes, you did.
Yeah,
lots
those
of
were
squash.
Good. Those ones that you brought in yesterday, those were those
apricot
were
or apricot?
Apricot.
Apricot or apricot? Yeah, 3-1. Apricot, sir.
So apricots.
I have not harvested any. But my tree is pretty much just rootstock. So it's a beautiful tree. I mean, it's got
a beautiful citation?
I don't know. What I planted was a Katie, but the Katie is long gone.
She moved across the country.
Yeah, to Durham. It's a beautiful tree. It's got a great form to it because once I figured out that it was the rootstock, I told Mel. I think I'm going to take it out because it's not going to do much. And she goes, but it looks so good over there in the corner. Yeah. So. I have an ornamental apricot.
You can graft on it every spring.
Yeah, I was going to say,
late winter you can be grafting.
But if it's a pretty tree, it's a pretty tree.
Yeah.
Do you like tangy apricots or apricots? Do you wait till they're totally ripe and fantastic, or do you pick them a little before? Have you paid any attention to that? Because
I like them
with a little bit of tang to them, too.
I like them. I like them sweet.
And then the outer fruit sometimes gets sunburned. Mm-hmm. And so it gets a little more strength to the flesh, but that has a different flavor to it, too, which do you like that?
No.
I do.
Okay. So then I'll apricot tomato or something like that.
Something like that.
I also had last week I had my first Dapple Supreme.
Ooh.
And it was from one of the ones I bought a year ago and then finally planted earlier this winter, and it has fruit on it. And they're really good. And it's early.
That's an apriome, right?
Pluot.
Pluot. I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track.
I know. Kurt used to bring them in every once in a while. They're pretty tasty.
Dapple Supreme, Dapple Dandy.
Okay.
Flavor Grenade. They're all really good. And then the different apricots or apricots and apriums. Apriums, if nobody told you they were
different,
an aprium, you would think it's an apricot or an apricot, depending on where you are in the spectrum. But the tree looks like an apricot. Now I'm starting to say it. I can't. The tree looks like an apricot. It gets trained and pruned like an apricot. The fruit looks like an apricot. And a pluot is as cross with a plum and an apricot, as is an aprium. But it is all plum. It looks like a plum tree. The fruit looks like a plum. A funky one, but it looks like a plum. And you train and trim the trees like a plum. But it is a cross. It's kind of confusing, but it gives us some neat fruit.
Yeah, interesting fruit.
Are you seeing thrip damage on your spicy nectar plums or nectarines?
Tons. Oh, I had a couple of those this week.
What's that?
Nectar
plum?
Spicy nectar plum. Thrip damage gives them that mottled netting look to it.
Right.
Rough edges on it. Yeah.
Yes, I don't think I've ever had a nectarine at home that doesn't have that on it.
So you don't go out there and prophylactically spray with spinosad or something?
Heck no.
I planned on that this year, but it didn't actually happen. I'm starting to get like you.
I cannot believe that you said me, you, and prophylactically treated in the same sentence. When have I ever not waited until it was way too late to try and take care of something?
Never.
Okay. I just wanted to be clear.
There's always hope. There's always
I forgot
hope.
About the spicy. I had a couple of those. No. I had a pixie.
That, I think that's one of the best fruit.
It's one of those best, you know, yeah. stone fruit.
Yeah. But, you know, Snow Queen Nectarine. Snow Queen Nectarine.
Yeah.
Those are pretty darn good.
I think ours are about ready.
Which is making me close. Think it's the white nectarine and the white spicy nectar plum.
That you like best.
The nectar plum is that you get the red foliage from the plum.
Right.
But the fruit, the tree, everything is treated as a nectarine.
And it does, and it even gets peach leaf curl like a nectarine.
Yes, just like a nectarine.
It's like a peach.
Did you harvest anything? I did have a tomato, and I've been harvesting cucumbers.
We harvested a cucumber. I think Capri ate the first tomato. I didn't get to it yet.
I think Melanie might have harvested some rosemary.
Yeah, I was gonna say, other than basil and thyme and things like that, which, you know, we've used a little of that.
Oh, wanted to let people know after a long drought, we have we've got milkweed in the store in Poway. I'm
we definitely have milkweed. We, I don't know if we have the fascicularis.
We did get some fascicularis in, and we did get some speciosa.
I thought you were going to say that in July, Saturday morning classes were coming back to the store. That's what I thought you were going to say.
July 10th.
But we can't talk about that now because
it's time to go.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We'll be back next Saturday with another hour of Garden Talk. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thanks for joining us on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, your source for gardening, landscaping, and horticulture news. Still have a question for the Garden Talk crew or want to learn more about the show, how to become a guest or sponsor? Send an email to askanexpert@walteranderson.com. That's askanexpert@walteranderson.com or visit walteranderson.com. There's more professional gardening advice next week at this same time on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery.
This program is sponsored by Walter Anderson Nursery.